Denominational Strategies for Growth. Oh, that's going to be a fun one. Now, just before we begin, a couple big generalities that I'd like to alert you to. I wonder if you, I'm sure many of you aren't, because many of you have asked, but the Institute for American Church Growth puts out about an every other month newsletter. Are you on the mailing list? You should be. If you're not, it's a free publication. Well, nothing's free in the world, so once a year, we ask you for a donation to cover your own cost of mailing and postage, which is about $12, but aside from that, it's free. If you don't send it, well, we'll keep you on the list, probably, for at least another year. So if you are not on that and would like to get it, it's probably the oldest newsletter, and we like to think the best. In fact, I have people like Herb Miller calling me and say, hey, where did you get that small group information? You fellows are geniuses. Could I reprint it in my newsletter? So, how do we do that? I guess, Dr. Mathias, if it's all right with you, that this afternoon or tomorrow, if they give you a card, and all the cards you give to Elmer, he'll send to me, and we'll just put you on the newsletter if you want to. We also are coming out with a new catalog. I brought only 10 of these. If you don't have this color catalog, you should get it. There's only 10, 11, so I'll leave them here afterwards. But we're coming out with a 52-page catalog coming up. Probably we have the resources more than any denomination or any group that are hands-on resources to make it work. We're the people who take theory and try to make it work in the local church. And towards that end, we have information on evangelism and incorporation and small groups, all from a church growth perspective. So if you're on the list, you'll get one of those in 1st of September. If you're not, you probably won't. Okay? So if that's of interest, we'd be pleased to include you on that list. All right, back to our topic, denominational strategies for growth. You have been appointed to the top level synod committee to make growth a reality in the denomination. There's a committee of three. You're one. There are two others, the highest caliber, top level, appointed by the president. I'm going to set my clock for 8 minutes. Would like to ask you to get in a group of three and come back with the top three recommendations that are going to move our denomination from a plateau where it's been for too long into vital growth and development. Do you accept the challenge of that? Okay, meet with two other people, and I want to hear your recommendations in 7 to 8 minutes. I put one on there for you, and yeah, grab one of those. Time's up, come on back. This way. Yeah, I'll stand to the side a little bit. Oh, Elmer, we just blew a bulb.
Just blew the bulb.
Let me try something here.
Oh, on the floor?
Yeah, we just blew a bulb. All right. We're going to make a list. Actually, we just blew a bulb in that, but no problem. He's going to fix it. We're going to make a list. Remember, you are one of three specially appointed by the synodical president. Am I doing all right? And you're coming back with recommendations. Someone raise your hand, give us your best recommendation from your group. Just start me out. All right, please. All right. Spend more dollars on staffing at the synodical level and on programming. Okay, we're getting our list going. Try yours, please.
Revitalize seminary training so that they have church growth eyes.
We got it. All right. let's go on to a... Say it again. Wait. Can't hear. Okay, here we go. We're back on the air. Thank you. Third, please.
At the seminary, also teachers' college and all the rest of the professional church workers' colleges, education, the whole system.
To do what? To
revitalize.
Oh, okay.
College training.
Ah, okay. Whole system, which includes seminary and college. Okay, please. Send vicars only to growing churches with growing pastors. Well, just to put a little bit on that, I mean, while we're being radical, including non-Lutheran churches. Oh, heresy. Be sure the door is locked. Give us another one.
On the job training for church growth principles for leaders and pastors. Not lectures, but on the job training.
Okay, some hands on how does it actually work and where and so on. Okay, doing a good job. Please. All right, we have a list going. Yes, sir, please. Well, okay. Rethink. Okay, rethinking our priorities or thinking them through in terms of our goals, directions, and so on. All right, please. Keep our list growing. What do we tell the president?
Articulate specifically and clearly what our purpose is. A lot of these are strategies, but you really have to, in denomination, you want to be sure what your purpose is and that everyone who is working in that denomination at that level knows what their purpose is.
Uh-huh. All right. A couple more, please.
Equip lay leadership and church growth principles.
Okay, top priority, the training and equipping of lay leadership in the understanding of principles and their application. Let's sort of put them together. Please.
Encourage and nurture small group bonding.
Okay. Encourage and nurture small group of the kind of the infrastructure there. All right. Oh, way in back. All right.
Revitalize and encourage the clergy and laity to join the ministry.
Okay. All right. A couple more.
Ahem.
I have to stop. Don't quote me out of this room. Promise, right? You will not quote Winhorn out of this room, right? I mean, here I am, St. Louis. And I thought, well, it'd be nice. We have some great new Sunday school resources coming out called the Great Commission Sunday School. Now, I knew, you know, you're not on fire for Sunday school, but there's a few that take place out there, here and there. So I started to schedule into my trip a meeting to meet with our Sunday school people here. And I shouldn't finish the story. Should I finish it? Anyhow, I called and said, "Hello, I'm Winhorn from the Institute of American Church Growth." They said, "What's that?" I said, "That's okay, you know, not everyone knows this." And I said, "We have some new material to help Sunday schools come alive with growing. For example, Church of the Nazarene has a denominational version, listed four or five denominations that have their own version, which is what we like to do, write language and so on, you know. So would you like to look at it?" "No, we aren't interested in growing." "Okay, thank you." Don't quote me, but it took place. So anyhow, right. Okay. So anyhow, church growth through our publication. Sure, good idea. Another one, please.
I didn't with that educational material for all age levels.
Okay. Materials at all age levels, please.
Call back Winhorn.
Well, I don't know about that. I'd love to talk to our Sunday school people. Okay, please. Say it again.
Restate
the mission. Okay. Someone said something like that. Maybe a dream. Please.
Fire that person at
CBH. All right. Well, let's take a moment now and... Okay, we're going to move on before I get in more trouble. And what I'd like to do is to keep this theme going for a moment, except to put it in a little different framework. We started thinking recently at the Institute for American Church Growth, how can one measure a denomination? I mean, where do you begin? By the way, a district, how do you measure a district? And where are they in the whole growth process? So we've developed an instrument that, I'd like to try it on you. Probably the best way to do that is pass them out, right? So why don't you take this side and pass everyone on this side, and Elmer can take that side. And while that's happening, the opening page on it talks about a denominational growth development scale. You can't quite read it. It's okay. I printed it for you. Where we say here, creating the environment so God can give the increase. We're trying to create an environment so God can grow His church. We don't grow the church. It's His church. But we're creating the environment. Now, as you get it, follow me on the assumptions. First of all, the growth mix of a denomination or district includes a variety of components in proper relationships. So now you need to begin thinking about the mix. That's one. Another assumption: if a denomination slash region In a denomination slash region, various components will be at different points on the scale. For example, you might have your evangelism committee up here. You might have your laity down here. So they can be at different places. A third assumption: forward movement on the scale requires intentional and appropriate strategy. You really need to walk up this thing, and a deliberate, intentional strategy is needed. Number four, the more resistant or indifferent a denomination, region, or district, the more time, energy, and resources will be required for growth. In other words, if it's down here and indifferent or resistance, it takes a lot more energy to get it moving to begin with. Finally, denominations/regions will see measurable growth as they move through and beyond the infusion step on the denominational growth development scale. All right, so there's some of the assumptions that we make. Now let me tell you how to use a scale. For example, let's turn over to the page here, and let's look at purpose. Take purpose, that's a good one. Under purpose, resistance to growth. Well, the purpose is defined by tradition, prejudice, close to change, and external pressures. Under indifference to growth, the purpose is not understood or prioritized, low commitment to the purpose. Mild interest in growth. Occasional questions arise on purpose and direction of denomination related to growth. Infusion of growth ideas. Purpose reviewed in the light of, by the way, you'll see EV, that's evangelism, church growth implications evaluated. How will it change what we're doing? Under structural growth, new programs reflect the purpose of growth, new structures create to better reach the purpose, and committed attitudes, positive, supportive, high commitment, visionary leadership, and so on. So we have listed a series of, what are they, 4, 3s, or 12, 4, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15. Okay. Now, as you begin looking at that, you begin to see, well, you know, it's fairly difficult and it's fairly subjective to try to evaluate that. But what you're trying to do is to say, well, at this moment, our denomination, or if you want to do this at a district level, our district is maybe a mild interest. Okay? Having done that, you turn to the last page. Notice we give you a self-rating graph. For example, under purpose, suppose you rate it, notice, what we say, mild interest in growth would be a 4. So you'd put on the line there by 4 an X. You sort of go through this, and you can do a whole graph. You can see where a denomination is and where you need to go to move it forward. Get the idea? Now, you're welcome to work with someone on that. Let me set my clock for about 8-9 minutes maximum here. And let's find out where you think we are in terms of this scale. We haven't listed everything, but it'll give you some feel. Okay, take the challenge of that. And if you want to work with someone, feel comfortable or free to do that. And well, you can do it either in the synod. Yeah, why don't you do it in the synod? Where we are in the synod. And then take it home to your district president and give him one and say, would all our district execs do this for your own district? It's a fun thing to do. But right now we'll do it for the synod. Well, let's take a try and see how you got along. Now, of course, it is very subjective, and you have to look at it in the light of that, and yet we think we have identified some of the areas concerned with growth. All right, let's take a few minutes and try some things. Now, my overheads aren't in the same order. But let's try something. Let's see how we do on this. G- Get up the one that says publications. I've never done this before. In fact, this is a very new instrument. But let's try it and see what the group thought in this. For example, under publications, we said occasional article with critical or negative flavor regarding evangelism, church growth. How many, what I'm going to do is go through this and count the numbers so you can get a little feel. How many listed this? I mean, this is where you put the X. You raise your hand. Okay, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. Okay, looked like about 8. Okay, indifference to growth. No news and or articles on evangelism, church growth. Anyone there? Okay, 1, looked like 1. Mild interest, occasional news item of a new concept or research finding in growth. Okay, well, that's a lot. Looked like about 35, although that was a quick guess. Publication of evangelism, church growth research related to denomination, both negative and positive. Okay, about 7 here. Regular columns devoted to growth, occasional feature articles. 0. High visibility of growth-related news and features, positive editorial support. 0. Okay, so we really peaked out in there. That could have been twice that many. I didn't count. What do? You who are church growth people, who are here, who are turned on to church growth. What do to make this happen? You plan a strategy, get to the editor of the denominational publication, and say, we want a regular column, or whatever you want. Because what moves these people are people like you. I don't move them. You know, that's someone else. He's not one of us. So us needs to start moving the power structure. Okay? Let's try another one just for fun here. What do you want? You name it. Well, let's go with this one. This is a fun one. I just said power structure. Power decision making. Let's try that one. Resistance to growth. Okay, there is a consensus among both leaders and followers that no change which departs from or alters status quo will be considered. How many put it there? Okay, 0. Okay, some interest in growth among some concerned laity, but power source, both lay and clergy, undermine it as it is seen as a threat to their control. Okay, looked like about 20, roughly. Power base is experiencing division. Some propose changes to produce growth, others against changes. Possible conflict of value on growth. I mean, there's a little dualism. Is that where you put it? Oh, that's a big group, maybe 25. Okay. I'm just being nice, you know. Okay. Infusion. Leadership committed to growth, but unsure how to make changes. Momentum of tradition still dominates. Okay. About 8. Power base broadened. New leaders with fresh ideas are respected, listened to. Outside consultants. Advice often utilized to help break the mold of yesterday. 0. That's probably true. I should tell you that there is value in outside consultants. When you're brought up in the system, you come with a system mentality. No business in the world would use an inside consultant. They're looking for fresh ideas, new insights. They want someone to challenge them, to upset them a little bit. You know, you don't want to hear the same old story through a consultant. Same words, just change around a little bit. Anyhow, I guess no one had committed. Okay. I want to try seminaries. Let's do it. Is that car out there waiting, Elmer, for me? Okay. Waiting for both of us, all right. Okay. Evangelism church growth courses seen as irrelevant or unnecessary to equip pastors. Perhaps there's some academic, it's academically opposed. Evangelism church growth. Okay, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 5. Okay. Evangelism church growth ignored in the curriculum. Okay, got two. Selected courses offered, but optional and of little substance. Perhaps intercession courses. Well, that's roughly our 35, maybe. Department or chair of evangelism church growth position is optional. Okay, about six. Department of Evangelism Church Growth, minimum of 10 hours required of all students. Dr. McGavran has a new book. He sent me the manuscript coming out. And he contends that there should be, let's see, I want to get it right, a third of the curriculum should be involved in evangelism church growth. Well, that's pretty heavy. But on the other hand, what would happen if a third of the curriculum dealt with evangelism church growth, some practicums out there, how we do it, and you had to plan a church before you left seminary, and you, wow. Who said, dream on, Arne? Committed to growth, A growth philosophy integrated into every class and all activities. Question, can we move all this up? Sure we can. Sure we can. Hey, how does it happen? By all the graduates of the seminary writing to president or whoever? Or finding the person who just gave $500,000 to the seminary, get next to them and tell them what you want the seminary to do, and it'll happen. I mean, that's the way we move the bureaucracy. Any others you want to try? That's probably enough. Take just 2 minutes to show the person aside of you or behind you your rating and look at theirs and see how you came out. Okay? No problem. That little evaluation material, as I said, is fun to use at your district level in your evangelism committee. It gives you a little feel where you can go. With a few changes, by the way, you can take that and try it on your board. Where are we as a church? In terms of a purpose statement, in terms of our budget, in terms of our conviction, theological base, and so on. They don't quite all fit, but you can modify that a little bit, and it's a marvelous instrument to get your people thinking and talking and involved with you on that. Okay. Okay, questions or comments? We have about another 15 minutes. And I want to tell you what I would do if the president put me on that panel. And what would I do? Okay, let's talk about what would Win Arne do if he were invited by the president to be on a selected panel with two other people. Well, I think I'd begin by recognizing, they are not the recommendations, but by recognizing that in my way of thinking, Missouri Synod churches, fellowship here, is really at a watershed time in their history. I wouldn't call it a crisis exactly. It's not quite a crisis, but it is a focal point. It's a moment of opportunity in the denomination. And down the road, 10 years, what is decided in the next few years will be very significant. Again, I want to compliment and commend the seminary and Dr. Matthias. Suddenly, church growth, or the seminary, and these are people who open doors, you know, have put their stamp on it saying it's okay to have a meeting on church growth at the seminary. Ooh, that's sort of new, right? Tell the person inside of you, okay, all right. But it is a very important time in history. And all of you who are here, I'm saying, are really the church growth people. The non-church growth people haven't come. I mean, they're not here. And how the denomination moves in church growth has a great deal to do with what you do from here on. It's a window of opportunity. It really is. Again, to follow through on that for a while, we've told ourselves for a long time what we like to hear, such as, Billy Graham says, we're a sleeping giant. We like to tell each other that, right? Okay. The Institute for American Church Growth says, we're going to be one of the great growing denominations, 20% next 10 years. And that's okay, but we've now come to the point where we have to do something about these things. Okay? I mean, we told ourselves that long enough. Now let's sort of move on and make it happen. I think there are initially six problems to solve that I think need solving. And I really can't dwell on them because I'm going to run out of time. But let me just identify the problem. The first is a leadership problem that has to be solved, in my estimation. Up until this time, now again, there are exceptions to this, and you may disagree, so this is purely from my observations, right? But up until this time, most of the church growth thinking that has taken place has come from probably two sources. One is pastors who have come alive to church growth thinking and are doing it, okay? And there's a growing number of those. Some of them have demons, others are working on it. But they are doing it. The other source of leadership to this time, in my estimation, has come primarily through the district executives in evangelism, or whatever their title might be there. I mean, there's some sharp executives out there who are trying to make it happen. What I find missing are the presidents, the synodical level people, and other facets of that. So I'm saying there's a crisis in leadership, for top leadership in the church to declare themselves and to move with it, which will mean that budget will flow and it'll all happen in our structure here. A second problem that I keep the motor running, Elmer, keep the motor running. A second problem I'd like to see solved . Well, let's take. I got to look at my notes here. This is an easier problem, but let's solve the problem of evangelism. In my estimation, we don't have, I use the term we, don't have an effective method of evangelism that everyone can buy into. Now, that doesn't say that Dr. Biesenthal here hasn't been across the country doing witness workshops. Boy, he's flown from one end of the country to another, and we've done a few master plan trainings, But nothing has quite taken hold yet that says, this is us. We're really going to do this, and it's going to work. So there's a need for the right evangelism. The master's plan that we do comes close to it, but it hasn't quite all come together. Another problem I'd like to see solved is the incorporation problem. If we could close the back door, we'd grow or come close to it. And of course, here the synod has been concerned. Dr. Kolb, yeah, has had that as a great concern for a period of years and has been doing some excellent leadership in there. But it still hasn't quite gotten to the grassroots. You know, it hasn't quite gotten there because the churches still haven't closed the back door. There's some resources and other things available to make that happen, but that needs to be an emphasis also, I think. I'd like to see another problem, a couple more solved. I'd like to see the school problem solved. Now, maybe that shouldn't be a problem. It depends who we're talking to here. But let's talk about the school system for a moment. The school system can have a negative or a positive effect on church growth. Let's look at some negative effects. A big school system can change the priority of a church from making disciples to mean only educating it. It'll throw off a priority. A negative effect can be, it can easily become the ministry of the church rather than a ministry of the church. Important, of course, but it can become the thing. It can, or a day school program, can easily drain key leaders from other church ministries to be used exclusively in the school. And of course, they can be subsidized by the church, weakening the church's ability to provide other ministries. Look at the positive effect. They can be viewed as a part of the strategy of church growth and have a significant part in that. They can build bridges to unchurched families. They can integrate parents and children into other activities of the church. And of course, they provide an additional way for unchurched families to be exposed to the gospel and the people of the church. I mean, the pluses are tremendous. But as I travel across the country, there are some churches that have seen their school program really blossom. It pays its way, and it's a source of helping to reach out. If that could ever happen across the synod, oh, there's a powerful resource there that could spectacularly help in the growth and development of the church. On the other hand, we've not yet convinced the education people that growth is significant. We don't have the movers, to my knowledge, you may know better than I do, but I haven't seen the movers and shakers in the education program, which is so strong, you know, in the synod here, come out 100% say, yes, we are for church growth. We need that to happen. We need to begin training teachers to see relationships, because that's where part of the sleeping giant is sleeping. Now, really, that's where it is. That's part of it. And there's a great resource if we could somehow move the school programs into seeing some new things happening. Well, let's see. One other thing to think about. I guess I would say the solving of the worship problem. Solving of the worship problem. Now, I know I'm on sacred territory here, and I give you this only for your thoughts. I'm reading some research here, at least giving you the highlights of it, done for baby boomer churches. In other words, the next generation coming along, and they're coming strong. What are they looking for? Well, this research paper says they are looking for enthusiastic contemporary music. They've been brought up with music, and they're looking for that. The style of music has something to do with communicating to that generation. This paper says, it's researched, that the Bible, also they want for the menu. They want to know what the Bible is all about. A very important priority for that group. Oh, let's see, there's a lot more we could talk about. Here they say, another point, I'm just skipping over here, that there will that they want an increased emphasis on praise and worship. In other words, it's involvement. It's high tech, high touch. We want to be involved in praise and worship personally. Now, these people have not read Schaller's new book, which just came off the press, which I mentioned to you that I was reading on the way here. Just picked it up. It's sort of new. And he suggests that in the Southern California subculture, well, indeed, Southern California is a subculture, but they're often pace-setting, that Schaller begins to see things that are going to hit the rest of the country. Here's what he talks about. For example, in the rapidly growing congregations there, there are certain elements that seem to be surfacing to speak to people today. Okay, one, he says, is the clear deviation from traditional mainline Protestant worship and moving toward religious experience. Rather than the promises of God, he says, constitutes the central validation of one's faith. Experience is starting to become higher rather than just the promises of God. He goes on to say, and this is what I mentioned to you earlier, that the centrality of word and sacrament, says Schaller, has been supplanted by word and music. He goes on to say, a theology of glory overshadows a theology of the cross. A fourth thing, in Schaller's typical way, a far greater emphasis is placed on the immanence of God rather than the transcendency of God. Is that right or is that wrong? Well, time will tell. And that's Dr. Lyle Schaller, who's a good intuitive thinker, a very good intuitive thinker, saying that the people who live today in a high-tech, high-touch society, that worship and relationships have gotten much, much stronger and closer. In fact, I was trying something. Let me try it on you. I don't know if this is true or not, and I'm about to stop with this, Elmer. You're getting nervous here. All right, yes, stop, he says. Again, I'm just sort of playing with this. we have on our bottom scale transfer growth, over here conversion growth. Going up this side, we have, let's say, formal worship. I don't want to say that. Let's say liturgy, okay? And up our scale, we have relationships. Out here, we put a line that says church growth. The closer, now, we begin drawing lines under liturgy, or you could even put past here and future up here if you want to. The churches that grow by transfer tend to grow like that. But the more you move up towards relationships, the more you will tend to move out towards conversion growth. So the thesis says, as in our style of ministry, of worship, and so on, as we become more relational, we will tend to have greater conversion growth. Tell the person inside of you, I'm still humming on that one myself. But our staff thought about it, and so I said, well, we'll try that. That's a hypothesis only. As the great apostle said, I didn't get that from the Lord, but my opinion is, you know. Okay, comment or question? Well, we projected about 4 years ago a 20% growth. I've revised that back to a 10% growth, assuming we can solve some of these problems and get it moving. Tell the person inside of you, Although you have to admit that was before our conference here at the SEM. So you never know. Question or comment?
I was asking, what is the six?
Yes, I have a very important number six, but unfortunately my time is gone. And the next time you invite me out, be sure and ask me. But in the meantime, you probably know better than I do what it is, right? Tell the person inside of you, right. Thank you for letting me share with you today.
Thank you.